Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from the KVRF 89.5 FM radio studio here in Palmer, Alaska. And we are on our day three coverage of the 2013 Iditarod. And on the line, as always, calling in from sunny California, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It looks like we are starting to have what's shaping up to be a very, very fast and exciting Iditarod.
So, it is. It is, and I know we're going to get into that very quickly, but what do you think about Martin, and what in the heck is he doing out there?
Well, you know, Martin, as we know, was the first musher out of the gate in Willow, and it was relatively warm, and a lot of people had been saying that the early part of the race was going to be very, very fast, and I think perhaps Martin was looking to take advantage of the good trail and looking to get through some of the more technically difficult parts of the trail, the steps, the Happy River steps and the Dalzell Gorge, ahead of the pack while it was still fast and while he could still make really good time and not have to worry so much about being one of the later mushers. All that said, the fact that he basically ran straight through with a few small rests to snack his dogs and to change booties and a little bit of that. He basically ran through for about 14 hours with a cumulative rest time of just a couple of hours, which is really an amazing and incredible thing for a dog team to do.
That's exactly right, and any time you can run your dogs with that little of rest, you know, that brings up memories of Robert Sorley, Lance Mackey, those types of names when you're thinking about that. Martin really has something special going on, and that could be the reason why he thought that he could do this when he found out relatively soon, you know, within the last few days, that his son Roan was going to pull out of the race. He could do that with the teams that he has.
Yeah, absolutely. And Roan Boozer, Roan and Martin usually would run sort of what I'd like to call co-A teams. So they would have really pretty evenly dogs that had pretty even abilities. So the top 32 dogs in their kennel. But with Roan withdrawing, that gave Martin the chance to pick what maybe could be seen as an all-star team of the 16 absolute best dogs in his kennel. And I've got to think that really would give him a huge advantage. We've also noticed that Matt Thaler, who is running in second place, is running what would have been the Boozer Kennel's C team, but with Roan out of the race, is more like a high B or a low A team. So he also running Boozer dogs is doing extremely, extremely well.
You know, it's going to shape up for one for the ages, I believe. And, you know, when somebody is doing something extraordinary like this, I know people really scratch their heads. I'm looking at the Facebook commentary for some of the folks that are posting on behalf of the mushers. One person in particular is Dallas Seavey's wife, Jen. She says they have no idea what's going on with the planning like this. But Dallas isn't worried at all. She thinks that, you know, his schedule is right on track and he's going to do very well.
Yeah, and last year Dallas did what he referred to as his building the dog machine strategy, which is he was pretty solidly in the middle of the pack and kept at it and kept to his run-rest cycle and then had emerged towards the end of the race with a team that was much stronger and hadn't been tired out the way some of the earlier teams had done. We've also seen a few people talking about how Martin took a similar strategy in 2011, the last year on the Southern route, and got way ahead earlier in the race, and then had some dog problems and fell way, way back, and John Baker was able to come from essentially the middle of the pack as well and win the race.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You talked about somebody had quoted running the Hugh Neff style of race, and he's very famous for that, both in the Yukon Quest and in the Iditarod. He'll start out very, very fast and go at that pace pretty much till his 24, which is typically in McGrath or Takotna, and then he'll slow that pace down a little bit and then let it work its way out, work out the kinks, so to speak, and slow that team down and figure the best way to finish the race and to avoid any mishaps along the trail.
Right, and that's a strategy that's worked very, very well for him in the Yukon Quest. Unfortunately, not as well for him in the Iditarod, where he is known for being the jackrabbit who will go way out in front early and then for a variety of reasons hasn't been able to really keep up the pace as well in the Iditarod as he does in the Quest.
Right, exactly. So today we have an interview that you did with Cindy Abbott, and we mentioned her on our preview show. She is running one of Lance Mackey's teams, I assume the B team, on his behalf and, of course, in her behalf as well. Before we play that file, it's about 11 minutes long. Do you want to set us up? Tell us a little bit about what Cindy's all about.
Yeah, mostly I think I'll let her speak for herself because it's a pretty great interview, and she's a really amazing and inspiring woman. I think it's fair to say that Cindy Abbott has always been someone who has a large sense of adventure. She lives here in Southern California and teaches at Irvine, which is a little bit south of Los Angeles. And this is her first time running the Iditarod, and I think that's all I'll say. I'll just let her speak for herself.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and start that interview a little bit earlier. This was recorded when, Alex?
This was recorded, I believe, last Tuesday or Wednesday.
So not too long ago. Definitely before the race, but just
a couple of days before the race. She was up in Fairbanks with Lance, and then they drove down, I believe, on Sunday. And then, as you know, there's a lot of official stuff that goes on in the few days before the race and a lot of meetings that the mushers have to go to. There's the banquet. They have to meet with their Iditariders, and there's a special lunch for that. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on in the last few days, in addition to most of the mushers trying to get in a few last training runs and perhaps make the final selection of which dogs they'll take.
So there you go. So here we go with the Cindy Abbott interview with Alex.
When I was 48 years old, my husband and I were watching a documentary called Everest Beyond the Limits. And after I finished watching it, I turned to him and said, I believe I have to go climb Mount Everest. And I'd never even climbed a rock wall in a gymnasium. And so with the single goal of taking up mountain climbing, to summit the highest mountain in the world. So I started training, and 5 months later, I lost my vision in one eye and was diagnosed with a very rare disease called Wagner's granulomatosis, which is potentially fatal and anyway, very serious. So I went treatment for that, but I kept on my training schedule, which my doctors weren't really happy about. Besides breaking my leg in Argentina, and 2 surgeries later, I stood on the summit of Mount Everest 2.5 years later. I held the National Organization of Rare Disorders banner on the summit because I actually had this disease for 14 years but went undiagnosed because doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. So my mission then became to help spread the word about the organization So when the doctor says, I don't know, you can go to this place and they can send you to the I don't know doctors. Because when I was diagnosed and doing research, the average time from diagnosis to death was 5 months. And so my goal became to spread the word. So I got that done. And people are like, okay, what are you going to do next? Run the Iditarod. And I'm like, well, yeah. That sounds like a great idea. I'd never been on a dog sled or anything. And I did some research on mushers, and Lance Mackey's story about almost dying from cancer and his kennel called the comeback kennel to come back and win the Iditarod 4 times in a row, and, you know, never letting anybody tell him he's limited by his physical condition, and just he didn't believe in never say never, and took me on as a project. And that was a year and a half ago, and I can't believe it. Saturday I'm going to be actually starting the Iditarod.
And what was it like when you first got in touch with Lance?
He probably gets a lot of people contacting him because, you know, he didn't know who I was, so I had to start the conversation with, hi, I summited Mount Everest last year. I don't know anything about dog sled mushing, but I want to run the Iditarod. So I got his attention that, you know, I can survive for 2 months on a mountain in the extremes of the weather and that kind of thing.
Right. How's it been working with him and training up there in Alaska?
It's really, really hard because I live in California, Southern California, work in California, family, and Lance is out of Fairbanks, and I have to fly back and forth. Sometimes I fly home for 4 days, and then I'm back up to the yard for 10 days and back home for 4 days, and it's been really expensive and really hard and steep learning curve. This is a very, very difficult sport.
Yeah. And could you talk a little bit about your qualifying races?
Since I was on the super fast track, my sixth time running a dog team by myself was the start of one of my first qualifier, 150-mile Sheep Mountain. But I ended up scratching, and I did a big circle. And I actually only finished one qualifier the first year. The second one, the Copper Basin, was canceled due to extreme weather and severe trail conditions. And so I only finished the UK 300, which is a really, really hard race. There was only 8 mushers in it. And so I had one qualifier done, and I still had to do 2 more and still get in a late entry to this year's Iditarod because I didn't have enough money or time. So I had to make my qualifiers this year. And I finished the Copper Basin, and then I finished the Northern Lights within a week of food drops, which is a deadline for the final late entries. Got my report cards in, got good report cards, and was taken on as the last entry into the Iditarod for this year.
As you've been working with the dogs, and as you've been, you know, getting more up to speed, is there anything that is really surprising to you that no one had warned you about or that you just discovered?
The whole thing of mushing. Everything surprised me. I didn't know anything about it. I don't even snow ski. I mean, learning to ride a sled, learning to drive dogs, learning to care for dogs, how to navigate trails. The whole sport is so complex and so amazing and so difficult. Everything surprised me about it.
Uh-huh. How have you been in terms of being able to bond with the dogs?
Has not been a problem. Lance Mackey's dogs are amazing. From the time they're born, he socializes them. He's with them all the time. His dogs are amazing, but very loving dogs, and I just bonded with them all immediately. I give them loves and hugs. Every checkpoint, you know, I'm bootying them up. I'm smooching on them. I'm whispering to them. I'm hugging them. It's not been an issue at all. My dogs and I, we just love each other.
That's fantastic. Aside from getting to know him and finishing, do you have any other personal goals for running the race?
Well, yeah, it's the personal challenge is just amazing, and the opportunity is mind-blowing because how many people get the chance to do either one of these things, let alone both? So I'll actually be the first female to finish the Iditarod and Summit Everest and the second person ever, which is pretty cool. But the fact that I'm 54, just took up both these endeavors, and I have this really rare disease, will really help me with spreading the word about rare disease, because it attracts attention. Attention attracts, you know, people hearing about the organization. And then we're also, my husband is personally funding out of his retirement account a documentary that's being made to further increase the awareness program of rare diseases, of my story, my journey. I have this saying I say, you can't wait for the storm to pass. You have to learn to dance in the rain. I mean, so I have this disease. I don't let it control me, but I don't have a death wish either.
Right.
I'm real responsible. I go to the doctor. I get my checkups. I take things as safely as I can.
Obviously, we're all really rooting for you. How are you feeling? How are you doing physically?
Well, right now I have a respiratory infection, which is ironic because the day before we went into base camp at Everest, I caught a respiratory infection and had it for the whole 7 weeks we were on the mountain and never got over it the whole time. So now I've got this respiratory infection. I'm out running dogs, you know, in 50 below or whatever. That's not good. I have to take all my medications every day because my disease is not what's called in remission. It's just quiet, sort of. And then I have a lot of physical, you know, arthritis, and I'm functionally blind in one eye. The vision is a problem, mushing, because a lot of it's at night. You are out in the wilderness. There's no safety nets in mushing. I don't know what people think. It's not the Tour de France, no offense, but the mushers and the teams, they're out there in the wilderness and have to survive. And so I just have a brighter headlight and more batteries.
Right. And when you've been working with Lance, did he give you any of his secret Lance Mackey tips or anything that you can talk about? I don't want you to talk about things that are really secret, but.
You know, Lance just gives me, he doesn't think of his things as secret, I think. He's a very open person. He just gives me things that work for him. And some of them I've taken and some of them I've altered, which is the way it is, I think, in every endeavor. What I like about Lance is his drive, his love of the sport. It's just infectious and beautiful. Oh my gosh, I have never seen, when I was learning and riding through the mountains behind him on a whip sled, watching him whining through sharp corner turns downhill with his dogs, I call it poetry in motion. I mean, you just watching Lance, and it was beautiful. It really was. So I know it doesn't really answer your question, but I think we all have to learn to mush on our own.
Yeah. And looking ahead at the trail, do you have a general plan for the race, or do you have a specific idea of where you're going to stop, or is it kind of a fluid thing that depends on how it's going?
Yeah, it's more the latter. I have ideas, but, you know, it's going to be weather dependent,
mm-hmm.
how my dogs are doing, how that last run went. But I'm pretty good at being able to do the distance, and Lance's dogs are amazing. So I'm hoping to finish in the middle of the pack.
Right.
That's my goal.
Okay. And have you already finalized your selection of which dogs you're taking, or is that still?
Yes.
Excellent.
No. I've got my 14, and they're out in the truck. They're back to Keene, who finished Iditarod 2 years ago. Lance's son is out. He's out dropping them right now for me. Nope, bunch of big love bugs, big strong love bugs.
Excellent. And I know that you have a website where people can find out more about you and perhaps follow you on Iditarod a little bit. And is that reachingbeyondtheclouds.com?
Yes, that's my website, yes.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Just to tell people, you know, don't just let life pass them by. You know, everybody has hurdles, and big or little, and that I think people just need to get out there and just enjoy life. I see too many people just sitting back and letting life go past them. It's too precious. I mean, it's so amazing, this opportunity to have summited Everest and now run the Iditarod.
It is.
It really is crazy.
It's a really amazing and very inspiring thing, and I hope that you have just a fantastic, fantastic race and are able to, you know, in addition to all the hard work, are able to enjoy the scenery and enjoy, you know, being out in Alaska and being with the dogs.
I love being out in the Alaskan wilderness with the dogs. I love it.
Well, have a great race, Cindy, and thank you so much.
And that was an interview with Alex and Cindy, recorded just a few days ago before I did a rod. Alex, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
You know, that is an amazing story, and we want to make sure that we promote her website a little bit, racebeyondtheclouds.com. That's it, correct?
No, it's reachingbeyondtheclouds.com.
Reachingbeyondtheclouds.com. Well, we'll make sure we put that on our show page as well. Cindy is currently listed in Finger Lake with 14 dogs. Finger Lake is the third checkpoint on the Iditarod. We go Willow, Yetna, Squitna, then Finger Lake. And that's where she is with several other rookie mushers, James Volek, Mikhail Telpin, and Christine Roloffs, I believe is her name.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
what do you,
and
go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to add. And she started the race. You can start the race with up to 16 dogs. She started with 14, so people shouldn't look at the fact that she has 14 dogs now as meaning that anything's gone wrong or that she's had to drop dogs. But she just started with two less dogs than she could have.
Right, and she has to finish with 8. And that brings up a good point if we can switch gears just a little bit, Alex. Dallas has said numerous times that he will drop several dogs along the trail and hope to finish with 9 dogs, the 9 strongest dogs in his kennel. And he often says that if you can finish with 8 or 9 of your strongest dogs, there's no reason to carry the full load throughout the entire 1,000 miles of Iditarod.
Exactly. And for a lot of mushers, they tend to drop dogs towards the end of the race when it's relatively flat and they're looking to get a little bit more speed. Mushers don't, if they can help it, they don't tend to drop a lot of dogs in the early part of the race just because you're going up and down elevation a lot. You're going over the Alaska Range. And so you want to make sure that you have as much power to get up the hills as you can.
Right, exactly. Any other news that we want to talk about? Amazing story with you and Cindy. I really appreciate you taking the time to get that file for us. That really helps us out here in trying to cover this the best way we can, hopefully in a way that a lot of other people aren't covering. And you know, we're hearing a lot of that from our fans out there. They're sitting back and listening to us, Alex, and they're hearing stuff that they don't hear every day from the typical media sites. I really am inspired by that, aren't you?
I absolutely am. Every year there are a few stories in Iditarod that really stand out and a few mushers who are just very inspirational. I think Cindy Abbott is definitely one of those people, and every time I talk to her, I feel more inspired. She's one of these people who just is so full of life and so positive and, you know, recognizes that there are challenges and just figures out how to meet them.
Exactly.
And I think that in a lot of ways, that's what the best of Iditarod is all about.
I totally agree with you there, Alex. Again, what an inspirational story, and it is reachbeyondtheclouds.com. Definitely check out Cindy and her story. I don't know if I've heard anything like that. As she mentioned in her interview, the first person to first woman to climb Mount Everest would also be the first woman to finish the Iditarod. That's a pretty special thing, don't you think?
Absolutely. Definitely, absolutely. And I think one of the things that we try to do and that we make an effort to do on this show is to highlight a lot of the lesser-known mushers and some of the, and I don't mean this at all detrimentally, some of the back-of-the-pack mushers, the people that you don't tend to hear about or read about. Almost all of them have amazing stories, and we try to bring you as many of them as we can.
That's exactly right. And if I could mention one person currently in fifth place, the other Mackey, Jason Mackey. He and I have gotten to know each other pretty well. He works at the feed store where I get a lot of my meat. And, you know, he's an Iditarod veteran. He's been dog training for many years, like he says, with his brother Lance. He pretty much grew up on a sled. But I am amazed to see that Jason is having such a good race so early on in fifth place, just two places behind his brother. Many of people will tell you that that Jason is one of the best dog trainers in Alaska, and it's proven to be true this early in the race. He's already in Rainy Pass with his brother and doing very well.
Yeah, and, you know, for a long time, Jason Mackey was kind of, and this is a relative term, but a little bit of the black sheep of the Mackey family. It certainly must be hard to come from a family like that where your dad won the Iditarod and two of your brothers won the Iditarod and one of them won it four times in a row. But he's doing extremely well. He seems to be having an excellent, excellent race. He also, for a lot of the time, seemed to be running right with his brother Lance. And they both stopped for several hours and camped at the same place. And so it looks like he's going to have a really fantastic race as well.
And you know what? I find pretty cool, and I hope I'm not wrong with this, but it's my understanding, and I didn't catch it as they were going out, but I believe his dad Dick was there at the start with Jason, helping him along. And if not, I believe he might have even been on that tag sled. Do you know anything about that?
I'm pretty sure he was there. I'm not sure if he was on the tag sled or not, but he was definitely there.
Very cool. You know, when you have a mushing legend like Dick there, Dick Mackey, along with, of course, the other mushing legend in that family, Lance Mackey, what a family, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could just add one small personal note, which is just a little bit weird, but some people who listened last year, I think I mentioned this. I was married in Alaska in the town. I guess town is a little bit of an exaggeration, but I was married in Coldfoot up on the Dalton Highway, the Hall Road, and by the bartender. And that is, Coldfoot used to be owned by Dick Mackey. It's a little town that has basically a gas station, a hotel, and a gift store and a restaurant.
You know, it became very popular on the Ice Road Truckers show on TV. That's a stop that they often make there at on the show. And you know, when I spoke to Jason, he used to say that he and Lance would go to school for 3 or 4 hours, and they get out of school relatively early and jump on the dog sleds. He said their real education was not in the schoolroom, not in the books, but on a dog sled. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I also wanted to mention just real quickly before we have to go that Sue Allen, who's a veteran Iditarod musher and is one of the people who appeared in Mush the Movie, she and her husband were extremely gracious to me. They were one of the first people that I talked to when I was making the movie, and they spent a lot of time with me and introduced me to all of their dogs and just were incredibly, incredibly gracious and wonderful and really terrific ambassadors to the sport of dog mushing. Her husband passed away this past October, and she and I believe five other people are making a snow machine run in his honor from Willow up to Nome, and I think perhaps spreading his ashes at some point on that trip. So Sue Allen is just a very, very well-respected musher, and her husband was an amazing, incredible guy. She ran several times with Martin Boozer dogs, and just wanted to have a small shout out to her and wish her and all of the people on the snow machines a great trip and safe travels.
Very cool. Alex, thank you very much. We're about out of time. We'll talk again tomorrow. Hopefully things really start shaping up in the next 24 hours. Looking forward to seeing what happens.
Absolutely.
We'll talk to you guys next time on behalf of my co-host, Alex Stein. We'll see you guys later. Goodbye.